members of Israel. So what do you think? This is a pasuk that we say very frequently on a normal basis. What do you think these psukim are alluding to? Where is the Aron traveling? Who are these enemies? Why do we say it before we read the Torah? Any thoughts? Where might it be traveling? Again, this is in Bamidbar, right? The Jews are in the desert. The Aron is with them. And these psukim describe what happens when the Aron would travel and would vanquish enemies. So which enemies do you think it might be vanquishing?
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
Thanks, Jeanette. I appreciate that.
So my feeling was always that this is, you know, kind of like with the fire and the pillar of fire and the pillar of smoke, that this was something that happened regularly in the Midbar. Whenever there was time to pull up camp, that Moshe Rabbeinu would say that as they were pulling up, and then he would say the second part when they were putting down roots. And in terms of Oyvecha, it's just, you know, our understanding that Hashem was constantly protecting us from, you know, from any enemies that would, you know, that would want to attack us in the desert, and that the Torah should, you know, should be a segula for.
Beautiful. So Jeanette suggests this is describing what would happen as the Jews travel through the desert. And that the enemies, that the Aron would travel in front of them, that the enemies described in the desert are the any enemies that the Jewish people might encounter on the way. Okay, beautiful. That certainly is a legitimate interpretation. I'll note one difficulty with it, which is, as you mentioned, Jeanette, usually when we think of the Jews traveling, we think of the cloud traveling, the Amud HaAnan traveling before them, and not the Aron. Here it's clearly the Aron traveling in front of them. But that is certainly a legitimate explanation, so thanks for that. Any other thoughts? I'll ask it in a different way. I wonder if you were giving a sermon, let's just say, about these two psukim, and you wanted to sort of take some general meaning from these psukim, that it's not necessarily referring to a specific time in history, that there's a general process being referred to here when we talk about the Aron, traveling, vanquishing enemies, and ultimately resting. What might you say? What could this generally be referring to? I'll suggest something, and let me know what you think about it, and then we'll get to the crux of this year, okay? So I would argue generally, when we encounter, I know there are a few messages in the chat. I'd like to. It's easier for me to just naturally talk verbally. So if you'd like to interject with comments, please feel free to either raise your hand, or I think you should be able to unmute and speak up, and I'll try to get the message in the chat afterward. But when you think of any process, any goal that you have, any goal, I would argue usually there's two stages. Usually you have an idea, you can argue three. You have a big idea, you try to accomplish it. There's some sort of obstacle or opposition you meet on the way to accomplishing that idea. And then ultimately, after some sort of struggle or effort that you've exerted, you appreciate the beauty of that idea, and then there's a sort of resting and enjoyment of that process. And I would argue, and we'll see Rav Hirsch, I'd like to go into more depth on this later, but Rav Hirsch suggests similarly that might also be what this is referring to. It's referring to a general process of the Jewish people through the Torah encountering any challenges they meet on their journey, and then ultimately enjoying the success of meeting that challenge. Okay, anyways, we read these psukim every single, in a normal world, every Shabbat before we read the Torah, and they're beautiful. Nothing particularly, at first glance, troubling about them. However, as we will see, these psukim are actually quite controversial, and it's because it's not just about the psukim themselves, but it's about their context, and it's also about the mysterious symbols surrounding these letters. I saw someone note this in the chat. But let me show you, let me begin to share my source sheet with you. Actually, before I do that, let me show you another image over here for a second. This is just going to be from Safari. So here we actually have, I hope everyone sees, here we have a tshuva from the Maharshal. The Maharshal was a early Acharon, a very authoritative Ashkenazic halachic decisor, and he's asked the following question. Okay, the question is, how is the scribe to act with regard to the inverted nunin, the nuns, the letter nun, which are inverted, found in our parsha? And let me show you what the Marshal has over here. I hope you can see it. Do you see this image? Hopefully you do. So the Marshal has a number of traditions, all relating to the backwards inverted nuns that surround this parsha. You could look here. My mouse here is now on one version of it. There are many different versions in our tradition about how there's an inverted nun at the beginning and end of the paragraph of Vayehi Bitzoha Aron in the Torah. The Marshal actually thinks that many of them are flawed. He actually thinks that the version that we have, which I'll show you in a minute, is actually pasul. It's invalid, which is quite interesting. But you see, there's something strange about this. There's these inverted nuns. Again, the letter nun, which is part of the Hebrew alphabet, is turned sort of upside down and backwards in the Torah surrounding this portion. So now I'll get to the source sheet and I'll show you the way that we usually have it. Just give me 1 minute. Here we go. This should be good. Okay. So if you look here, I have it in source number one. I have the first verse, the first immediately preceding these psukim. It says, "Vayisu mehar Hashem derech shloshet yamim." The Jewish people, they traveled from the mountain of God, Har Sinai, on a journey of 3 days. Va'aron brit Hashem noseh lifnehem. And the covenant, the Ark of the Covenants of God, traveled in front of them, Darish Loshet Yamim, for 3 days, Lator Lahem Menucha, to seek out a resting place for them, Va'anan Hashem Alehem Yomam Benasam Ben Hamachane, and the cloud of Hashem was upon them as they traveled from the camp. Okay, so we're with the Jews in the desert right now. We're actually, after describing, as we'll get to, a number of very exciting parshiot in the Torah, and the Jews are traveling from Har Sinai. They got the Torah. They got many mitzvot. The Aron travels in front of them. That's what these psukim are describing. And then again, we have these two psukim. As you can see, I'll try to highlight it over here. As you can see, the psukim are bracketed by these upside down nuns. Okay? And then we have Vayehi ben So Aharon, as we've read, and then followed by Vayehi Am Kemit Onanim. As we'll get to, a description of complaints by the Jewish people. Very disappointing, challenging complaints by the Jewish people. This is one of the parshiot where you read about the Jewish people and you're like, really? Really? Are we that childish and immature? Are we still complaining about everything after everything God's done for us? So that's what follows these two psukim. Now, the Gemara, as we'll see, was very impressed by the fact that these two psukim are bracketed in this way. And I'd like to read the Gemara with you to sort of explore that notion. This is the Gemara from Shabbat, Daf Kuf Tat Vav Amud Bet, begins there. It's talking about a very sort of peculiar topic. The topic at hand is, there's a rule in the Talmud that if there is a fire in a neighborhood, obviously, if there's a fire and it's endangering anyone, any person, obviously we put out the fire. But assuming that for whatever reason, for argument's sake, there's a fire in a community, it's not endangering anyone's life, but obviously it might destroy property. And the Gemara actually says that given that no one will be endangered, there are rules as to what you're allowed to save from the fire and what you're not allowed to save. And the Gemara is concerned that if you are in the middle of saving your property, You may get sort of excited and nervous and agitated and put out the fire. You're not allowed to put out a fire on Shabbat. That is one of the 39 malachot. You're not even allowed to put out a fire even if it's to save your property. You're not allowed to put out a fire on Shabbat. You can't extinguish a fire. Therefore, the Talmud says that there are rules as to what you're allowed to save. One of the things you're allowed to save is a Sefer Torah. You're allowed to save any holy book from the fire. And that's a discussion in this Gemara. And the Gemara says as follows in source number 2. Bar mine Rav Huna bar Chalov mir Rav Nachman. So Rav Huna bar Chalov raised a dilemma before Rav Nachman. Sefer Torah she'en bo lelaket shmonim v'chamesh otiyot. If you have a book, a Torah scroll, which doesn't contain in it 85 letters. It doesn't have 85 letters. So think of a Torah scroll which has had many letters sort of scratched out. It's an old Torah scroll. You wouldn't be able to read from it in shul. And it has less than 85 letters. Why is 85 letters significant? Kigon b'parsha harshat v'hi b'an soha aron. Because the parsha that we've been referring to, of v'hi b'an soha aron, has 85 letters. And the Gemara asks, matzilin otam b'nei adleko ein matzilin. Should you save it or not? Now, the Gemara takes it as a given that as long as the Torah scroll has 85 letters in it, then you should save it. There's some significance to that Torah scroll. Again, the Torah generally has thousands and thousands of letters in it. Now we're talking about a scroll with 85. Why is 85 significant? Because that's how many letters there are in Vayahi bin Soa Ha'aron. And just to show you, this is not just a question. This is not just a question in the Gemara. My screen sharing is paused. I pressed the wrong button. Let me get back to it. Okay, we're continuing, hopefully. So this is not just a question in the Gemara on a you know, philosophical level. This is practical halacha. If you look in source number 3. Rambam simply says, if you have a Torah scroll with 85 letters in it, you save it. Why? Because that's how many letters there are in Vayahi bin Soa Ha'aron. And the obvious question then is, well, why do we care about that? Why is it significant that there is a certain amount of letters in the parsha of Vayahi bin Soa Ha'aron? Why does that mean that if there's enough letters such that there's 85, just like in Vayahi bin Soa Ha'aron, then we save the Torah from the fire? So the Gemara elaborates, and it says as follows. And here's where it's striking. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Vayahi bin Soa Ha'aron Vayomer Moshe, Parsha Zu, Asala HaKadosh Baruch Hu Simanayo Milmada Milmata. And this is referring to the nuns that we had described earlier, or whatever the signs are, that this parsha, these two psukim, Hashem made for it signs above and below it, lomar she'ein ze mikoma, to tell you that this parsha is out of place. These two psukim are in the wrong location. That's the point of these nuns. They should have been somewhere else in the Torah. Instead, they are elsewhere. They're here. And the nuns are to tell you that we're bracketing off these psukim because they're out of place. That is the first opinion in the Gemara. There's a second opinion. And that is the opinion of Rebbe. Rebbe Omer, lo min Hashem hu zeh, no, that's not the purpose of the nuns. No, it's to teach you that it's its own independent book. That these two psukim are their own independent book of the Torah. And the Gemara elaborates on this. Kiman Azla, ha de Amar Rabbi Shimon bar Nachman Amar Rabbi Yonatan. Whose opinion is this statement of Rabbi Shimon, the son of Nachman, in the name of Rabbi Yonatan following? Chatzva amudeha shiva. It quotes a pasuk from Mishle. With wisdom she built her house. She carved its 7 pillars. Ela shiva sifrei Torah. These are the 7 books of the Torah. 7 books of the Torah, right? I at least grew up thinking that there are 5 books of Torah. We say it in Echad Miodea, Chamisha Chumshei Torah. It's called Chumash. Chumash means 1/5. because the Torah is divided into fifths, and this opinion says you got it all wrong. There's not five books of the Torah. There are seven books of the Torah. Seven books of the Torah? Well, yes, because Bamidbar is divided into three. There's the book before Vayehi Bensorah. There's two little psukim in the middle. That's its own second book in Bamidbar. There's everything until the end of Bamidbar is book number three. So we just turned Bamidbar into three different Sfarim, three different books. Add it all up, there are seven books of the Torah. Whose opinion is that, says the Gemara? That is Kiman Kirebi. That's the opinion of Rebbe. Rebbe, who says these two nuns are to tell us that these two Psukim of Vayehi Bensorah are their own book. The obvious question is, what in the world does that mean? What in the world does that mean? It's its own book. You know, I think these are great psukim. Don't get me wrong. But there are many wonderful psukim. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Beautiful. What an important pasuk. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Atitich Meretz Mitzrayim. V'yahat L'reicha Kamocha. All very important, prominent, essential psukim to our tradition. No one ever said that their own book. No one ever said that Aseret HaDibrot is its own book. What does it mean that Vayehi Bensorah Aharon is its own book? It's very strange. That's question the first thing we need to figure out. And I'd like to suggest an answer to it. And obviously, I hope this will leave you with some food for thought, because this is not an easy riddle to solve. Then we get to our second opinion, which I will also argue is quite troubling. So, Mantana de Polygalad the Rebbe. Who argues on Rebbe, right? We had our first opinion, which says that it's not that it's its own book. It's just two psukim out of place. So, which opinion holds that these two psukim are out of place? That's Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon, son of Gamliel, the Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer. Atida parsha zu sheteaker mikan v'tetab mikoma. This parsha is destined to be uprooted from its place and to be written back in place. On a simple level, that when at some point in the future, when Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to take these two psukim and put them in another place in the Torah. V'lama katva kan, why did the Torah write it over here? Why put it where it is? K'dei l'hafsik ben paranut rishona l'paranut shnia, to separate between the one punishment and a second punishment. That these psukim are out of place because otherwise there would be two consecutive stories about punishments to Jewish people in the Torah. The Torah didn't want that. It's sort of negative and depressing to read about two punishments in a row. So to disrupt the sequence of two unfortunate scenarios in a row, we put these two psukim by Vayehi Bensorah. What are these two stories about punishments to Jewish people? So, Paranut Shnia, says the Gemara Maihi, what's the second punishment? Vayehi Ha'am Kimitonanim, as we'll see hopefully in a few moments. It's the Psukim describing that the nation were complaining. Paranut Shnia, Paranut Rishona, Vayesu Me'ar Hashem, and the first punishment is the description of the fact that they travel from the mountain of God. And Va'am Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chama says in the name of Rabbi Chanina, Shesaru Me'acharei Hashem, that when the Jews traveled from Sinai, they weren't just traveling from Sinai, they were traveling away from God. They were distancing themselves from God. And that is the second description of a negative story in the Torah about Bnei Yisrael. And to separate between these two stories, and we'll elaborate them on in a bit, we took the Torah, these psukim, and put them out of place. V'heichan mekoma, where does it really belong? Amar Avashi bidgalim. So the real place for these two psukim, Avayehi Bensorah Aharon, is meant to be in the part of the Torah describing the digalim. Digalim means flags or standards. Now, actually, there's a bit of a dispute as to what this is referring to. Most authorities assume it means Bamidbar. At the very beginning of Parshat Bamidbar, rather in the middle, in a Sefer Bamidbar rather, there's a psukim describing how the tribes of Israel were grouped into flags. Right, one of them, as we'll see in a minute, is Yehuda and Yisachar and Zvulun, three tribes all under one flag, the flag of the tribe of Judah. And the 12 tribes are divided into four groups. Each group has a flag, and that's where these two psukim should have been located. So two questions we need to figure out then, okay? Question one is, why is this its own book in and of itself? Question two, what do we mean when we say it's out of place? And let me get to source number four now, okay? So the question is, in what sense are these out of place? And I love even just with a thumbs up or thumbs down. Tell me if you think, based on the context of these psukim, immediately preceding them, if these two psukim are so out of place. If you really think it's just crazy that they're where they are. And noting that there are many times in the Torah where there are psukim that don't really seem to flow from the immediately preceding psukim, right? We have a number of mitzvot. And in Parsha Kedoshim, for example, we have one mitzvah that has nothing to do with the mitzvah following it. No one ever said that it's out of place. But these psukim are out of place. Let me know if you think it's so crazy that these psukim follow the Parsha beforehand. If you look at source number four, here is what comes immediately before the Parsha of Vayivin Soa. It says as follows. This is in Bamidbar, Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayhi b'shana ha-shinit b'chorash ha-shinit b'shrim ha-chorash, na'ala na'me'a yashkan ha-yidot. So, in the 20th day of the second month, the cloud lifted from the Mishkan. Vayesu b'nei Yisrael ma'asem bar Sinai. And the Jewish people went on their travels from Mibar Sinai. Vayishkon anam b'bar Paran. And then the Anan dwelled Mibar Paran. And without reading it inside, the next psukim all describe how the tribes of Israel travel together, and specifically how each degel, each flag, traveled. How there was a procession, there's an order. First, the degel of Yehuda travels, and that whole, all the tribes in Yehuda, which means Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. And then the Mishkan begins to get taken apart. Then the second degel travels. These psukim are describing the procession of the digalim of Bnei Yisrael as they travel through the desert. If you look at the fifth line of the source, after we describe the travels of Bnei Yisrael at that time as they traveled in the desert, Moshe invites Chovav, who will argue for now is his father-in-law, Yitro. He tells him, come with us to Israel. Come with us, stay with us, guide us. Yitro says, no, I don't want to, I want to go home. Moshe says, no, don't leave us. You've been with us in the desert. You've helped us travel. You'll be eyes for us. And immediately following that, we have the psukim I showed you before. You can look at the numbers, look it up inside. Take my word for it. I'm not leaving anything out. The next psukim are Vayehi ben Soah Aharon. Okay? To me, they're not out of place at all. It's really not so crazy that Vayehi ben Soah Aharon is the next psukim. Think about it. We describe the Jewish people traveling. Moshe asks Yisro to travel with them to Israel. And then, the next psukim are, and when the Aron traveled, this is what happened. Is that so out of place? To me, it seems pretty logical. It's a great procession of psukim. So why are we so bothered that we had to put these two nuns to bracket it out? It's really mind-boggling. What is so troubling about these two psukim? They're two innocuous psukim. They're beautiful. And this is how the Jews traveled. This is what happened when the Aron traveled. Why are they out of place? Specifically, this seems to be a description of the Jews traveling toward Israel. The Jews are about to go to Israel. The Aron travels in front of them. And this is what Moshe said when the Aron traveled. So what is so bothersome? Going back to this idea that it's its own, that it's to separate between two punishments, just to note, there is actually a disparity of opinions in terms of the punishments. And here's where we get to the very unfortunate, bothersome psukim in Bamidbar. If you look in source number five, these are the psukim which immediately follow the psukim of Vayehi ben Soah Aharon. And again, you read these and you just want to rip your hair out. Like, how silly and shallow can the Jews be? Here's what they say. The Jewish people were complaining bitterly before the Lord. Hashem got angry. There's some sort of complaint here. The Jews are complaining. There's a fire that burns them up. The nation screams to Moshe. Then Moshe davens and the ish, it stops. They called that place Tavera, which means burning, because the fire of God burned against the Jews. That then we have another story. The riffraff, whoever those are, we'll leave that for now, in their midst, had a craving. They wanted something. They started crying, God b'nei Yisrael. We want meat. God, we want meat. It's not fair. We remember the fish we had in Egypt. Oh, that fish while we were slaves in Egypt. It was so good. We miss it. We want the fish. We remember the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions. Oh God, where is all that wonderful food from Egypt? And now all we have is this, we don't have anything. All we have is this mun. Okay, so the psukim right after Vayhi ben Soharon describe this horrible scene of the Jews complaining and complaining and complaining, and frankly getting punished for it. If you look in the Mefarshim, there's two interpretations, and I'm going to move a little bit quicker here because I think we started a bit late, so I think I have some time, but not too much. There are two interpretations in the Mefarshim as to what the Jews were complaining about. Opinion one is Rashi. Rashi says that the first punishment here is when the Jews left Har Sinai, they left it with the intention of eating meat. They left Har Sinai with that intention, and that is what's bothering them. That they don't, that the punishment is that they, that immediately when they left, they wanted this meat, and that was a problem. Tosfot disagrees. Tosfot says that if you look in the psukim, as you just said, there's the episode of number one, this complaining, and then where the fire of God burns against the Jewish people is immediately followed by the episode of the Jewish people complaining again for the fish and the meat. So that wouldn't be a separation. If the point of the two psukim is to separate between punishment one and punishment two, those two stories immediately precede each other or follow each other. Therefore, Tosfot argues that what happened was the Jewish people ran away from Sinai. They ran away, as it poetically describes in Midrash, Ketino Kaporea Mibira Sefer, right, where the teacher says, okay, so for tomorrow, bell rings, kids all run out of class. The Jewish people got mitzvot at Sinai, says the Midrash. And as soon as they had the opportunity to leave, they ran away, no more mitzvot. And these are the punishments to not, so that's punishment one, when they left Har Sinai, they did it inappropriately. Punishment two is the Jews complain against God about the meat. And to separate between those two negative episodes, we have Vayhi ben Soharon. Okay, again, understood that these are two psukim which are very negative. But our question is, what is Vayhi ben Soharon doing here? In what way is that a place? In what way is it its own book? So here we go to what Rav Hirsch, I saw this from a few sources, from Ari Khan, has a shir on this topic. And actually, when I was in Yeshiva in Shalavim, my Rebbe Binyamin Zimmerman discussed the follows. And I think there are two different ways to interpret these psukim. They're kind of the opposite. They're both very informative and enlightening. And I hope that they will share a solution here as we come to a close. The first thing to understand is, where is the Aron traveling here? If you look at the Mefarshim, Rashi, Sefarno, Rabban, they all say that the Aron was supposed to travel to Israel. What I mean by that is that this was supposed to be a story of the Aron leading the Jewish people into a triumphant conquest of the land of Israel. That's what these psukim are describing. They're describing the Jewish people meeting their destiny, going into Israel, conquering it from their enemies, settling the land, led by the Aron, and finally, after all that success, the Aron rests and the Jewish people have accomplished their mission. Look at the Sfarno in source number 9. He says very clearly, if they didn't send the spies, they would have entered Israel right away, this would have been the end of the story of Bamidbar. This was supposed to be it. And I think the negative aspect of the story is, why is the story out of place? It's because it shouldn't have been out of place. This was supposed to be the next psukim, but we blew it. But the Jews totally blew it. Taking a bit of a global perspective here, the Torah from the beginning of Shemot until this point in Bamidbar describes an ideal process. There's a Jewish people, we leave Egypt, we get the Torah, we become a sanctified nation, we learn about how we're supposed to use the philosophy and lifestyle of the Torah to go to Israel and build an ideal society. And we learn all sorts of things about how to do that. We learn about the Mishkan. Hashem joins us. He dwells amongst us. And that's all until these two psukim. And when we get to these two psukim, or rather, after these two psukim, it all goes downhill. And it never happens. The Jews complain and complain. They make mistake after mistake. And unfortunately, we know that generation is wiped out in the desert. Gone. And we're here today, and we have the alternative ending to the Torah. And it takes a long time for the Jews to settle Israel, and there's idolatry in the way, and we make mistakes. The Batei Mikdash are destroyed. So in a sense, then, these two psukim should have not been out of place, but because of what follows, they are. These two psukim are describing what should have happened. In that sense, they're out of place. In that sense, then, and if you look in the Mefarshim who describe the Nun, many Mefarshim say the Nun is describing, the upside-down Nun represents Nefila, it represents the sins of the Jewish people, it represents how we fell, how we messed up. That's the point of this Parsha, describing what could have been, but what wasn't. However, there's another interpretation here, and for this, we're going to go to the Zohar. And I know the Zohar is an esoteric work. I don't pretend to be an expert on it, but I like to share this message with you. I find it very inspiring, and it's a different way of looking at these psukim. The Zohar says as follows: Bo ur'e, come and see. Nun be'ashrei yoshri be'tech lo nemra. When we read ashrei, which is something we say every day, hopefully at least three times a day, there's no letter nun. There's a letter representing every letter in the alphabet except for nun. Mishum chi bagalot, because the nun is in exile. And without getting into how or why, we'll see that the nun here, for whatever reason, represents Shekhinah. It represents God's divine presence. Hare preshu achaverim shekato nafla lo tosef kum betula Yisrael. Nafla. They have fallen. They will not get up again, the maiden of Israel. It says that the Ark of the Covenant of God travel for 3 days to seek out a resting place. Once the Aron was traveling, so the Aron is traveling, the Shekhinah is with the Aron. Says that is the psukim are describing here. The Shekhinah, Hashem's presence, is with the Aron. The Aron is away from Israel. It's ahead of them. And here's the kicker. Israel. See how much Hashem loves Israel. Even though they stray from the straight path, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo rutzel azvam. Hashem doesn't want to abandon them. Even when we stray from God, God doesn't want to leave. And if you look at the end of the Zohar, I know I'm running out of time, so unfortunately I'm going to have to describe it outside. The Zohar says the backwards nun is Hashem distant from us, but looking back toward the Bnei Yisrael. That even as he's distanced from us, he looks back toward us. It compares it to a deer. If you look in the desert, or not in the desert, if you ever see a deer, often the image we see of them is that they're away from us, they're facing toward the way, but they look back toward you. The message of that backward nun is that while God sometimes has to distance himself from the Jewish people, but he always is looking back toward us, waiting for us to return. So the message then of this book, I think, is twofold. And what this will conclude, and I think this is why it's a book in and of itself. Number one, it describes how we completely, in that generation, messed up. How we were supposed to have an idealized version of history. How we were supposed to, we had a vision, everything was going for us. We're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, we're going to settle it. We're going to make a Beis HaMikdash. And we totally threw it away. This was the book of the Jews that should have happened but didn't. This was the book in the Torah that was never written. This was the book describing the trials in front of us. We are successful. We build the ideal society and it stops. But at the same time, even as that happens, God looks back toward us and says, you messed up, but I still want a relationship with you. I still want to give you that chance. So as we reflect upon these psukim, I think specifically in a difficult time like this, it's worthy to note that we on the one hand, feel that distance. And we sometimes distance ourselves from God. God gives us that opportunity, and we blow it. But even when that happens, Hashem still looks back toward us. Hashem still wants to have that relationship. He's like that deer that runs away from you, but looks toward you. And Amir Tzah Hashem, we should be able to finally see the actual writing of this book that never really got written, so that it should be put in its actual place as not simply a description of what should have happened, but what actually happened, and we should be able to feel that love that God has toward us and see the ultimate realization of B'nai Yisrael's mission. Hope I didn't go too over time. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll turn over the floor to Ezra and the next speaker.
Thank you, Rabbi Bergman.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Bergman. Once again, I see a number of people have joined us since the beginning, so I'll reiterate my thanks not only to all those who are attending.